Storytellers series and will feature the real, true stories of immigrants and refugees now living in Portland. Storytellers include Zara Abukar from Somalia, Lily Ningsa from Indonesia, Eva Rotter Johnson from Venezuela, and more. Again, that's We Can Listen, Tuesday, June 13th at 7 p.m. at the Old Church, 1422 Southwest 11th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Tune in Thursday, June 15th at 10 p.m. for another special live remote broadcast from What the Festival at the Wolf Run Ranch. Once again, we'll be showcasing the musical and visual artists at this year's festival with interviews, music, and interactions with the producers and the participants, exploring what makes this such a uniquely immersive and entertaining festival. Again, be sure to tune in on Thursday, June 15th at 10 p.m. for our What the Festival broadcast. More information can be found on the KBU website under Community Events.
Check it out, baby. If the funk gets too hot for your rump, turn the other cheek, mama. Yeah.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Good evening, and welcome to Labor Radio of the working class, by the working class, and for the working class. The only program of its type in Oregon or Southwest Washington. I'm Steven Siegel, and I'm here with co-host Chris Reiser.
Hey, good evening.
Hey, Chris. And sitting in with us today is our special guest, Elizabeth Teal. Elizabeth is a teacher in Portland Association of Teachers. Welcome, Elizabeth.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. So, Elizabeth, you are the vice president of Portland Association of Teachers. We can call it PAT now that I've said it a couple of times, I think, but we do need to be careful about our acronyms. Tell us just a little bit about how that's been. I mean, you've been a teacher for many years, but this is something new to you. How has your year gone? What's it been like being vice president of PAT?
Oh, wow. Yeah. Well, it's been a exciting year, I suppose. A lot has happened this year. The way the year started out, we were looking forward to passing Measure 97 and seeing $6 billion added to the general fund for education and healthcare. We were imagining a very different outcome to the presidential election than what happened. We were not anticipating a lot of the political activity that has been really taking a lot of our attention in Portland lately. So it's been a very different year than what I expected. This is my first year as a union vice president, but you know, all of these things are what unions are for. So it's also exciting to be able to be in a position to help people organize around the things that matter to us.
Right, okay. Have you missed being in the classroom?
Very much, yeah, especially this time of year.
Right, yes.
Yeah, and just briefly, could you just give us a little background on what, you know, drew you into union work, organizing work, and eventually to run for vice president?
Yeah, so I have been teaching for 14 years, and I became active in the union when it hit me that No Child Left Behind was not, in fact, going to be laughed out of town before it started having an impact on schools. And at that point, I was like, what are we going to do about this? And it became clear to me that the best way, maybe the only plausible way for teachers to have the kind of voice that we should have in education policy is to band together, and our unions are how we do that. So that's what brought me in, work in my legislative committee of my union. And after that, I became an organizer in my building and a building rep. And I just couldn't keep myself from getting involved in everything else.
Awesome.
I'm also a parent, and so I also see education. From that standpoint, my two kids go to Portland Public Schools, and one of my daughters used to say she wanted to be a teacher, and so one of the things that drives me also is making sure this is a profession that I would want my children to go into.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Great.
So as you mentioned, talking about elections, the May election brought some significant wins for PAT in some of the school board candidates, Rita Moore and Scott Bailey for zones 4 and 5 respectively. And also we did get the bond measure passed to further upgrade infrastructure, including, I believe, some funds to ameliorate the lead problem in the water. How will these election outcomes benefit PAT members, students, and the community in general?
Yeah, that was a really good election night. We deserved it. So yeah. It's been a long time coming. The bond is huge. It's going to allow us to address really just the, you know, first of all, basic human needs like safety in our buildings. And then beyond that, hopefully to design and build schools that will really feel like special places for kids, where that we value our students and we're trying to give them the resources that they need. Yeah. It's going to be a long process, as voters have probably noticed. We just passed a bond. There's going to be one coming every 4 years in order to fulfill a 30-year plan to rebuild our schools, if all goes according to plan, maybe longer. So that was really exciting. And then the wins of both of the candidates that the PAT was endorsing for school board was really exciting. Rita Moore and Scott Bailey have been working for over a decade, both of them, to address inequity in our district. And that's how I got to know them both, is looking at what are the systems in our district that are perpetuating the inequity that we've all been seeing, and how do we get into the workings of our district to address and change those things? And I have huge amounts of faith in Rita and Scott to be able to not just call out the problems, but they will do that, but also to understand the inner workings of things that make those problems continue replicating.
Definitely.
When you talk about endorsing candidates, what sorts of things did PAT do to support the candidates? I'm sure there was some financial support, but what else did your union do?
That's a great question. So actually, our union has a separate arm, sort of, the Portland Association of Teachers Political Action Committee is a PAC, so that we can support candidates. You can't support candidates for office with union dues. So members have the option of giving money in addition to their dues to the PAC. The PAC has an elected board of teachers who are elected by the contributors, who then research and interview all of the candidates, deliberate, and vote on who to endorse. And with after those endorsements have been made, the PAC uses those funds that have been given by members for that purpose to support candidates. But absolutely, we have a lot more to give than funds. We have our name, we have our energy and our time, and teachers have put in a ton of time volunteering for candidates that we believe in. And this election was no exception. We were doing phone banking, house parties, and actually probably the biggest thing is just word of mouth, getting the word out to people that we know.
Thanks. Well, what can you tell us about the status of bargaining? You have been bargaining for quite a while now. I don't know exactly how long, but the status of bargaining between you and Portland Public Schools.
So I'll tell you the story. It's a long story. We did begin bargaining on this contract about a year and a half ago. So our current contract expired a year ago now, in 2016. And we embarked on a new kind of bargaining for us, interest-based bargaining. And this is different than what's considered traditional bargaining, because instead of coming with two sides with vastly different proposals and then sort of trading and arguing yourselves down to some meeting point, the idea behind interest-based bargaining is you start with storytelling and building trust so that both sides understand where the other side is coming from. And instead of proposing solutions right away to these problems, you work together to identify your interests and then find ways to meet those interests for both sides. So it sounds like a fantastic process, and I think it is a really good process. But what was a little tricky about it this time is in the last year and a half, if you haven't been following Portland Public Schools, you might not know that almost all of the leadership from the district turned over. So the people that were there for that storytelling starting a year and a half ago are, for the most part, no longer there. Mm-hmm. And I believe that has made it a lot harder to get to an agreement through this process. And so it was just last week that the district officially ended interest-based bargaining. And so we are now into a traditional bargaining trajectory.
Yeah, and if I could just interject to full disclosure, I'm a member of the Portland Association of Teachers. I'm also a building rep, and I was involved as an observer in the interest-based bargaining process and received some of the training that the members on the bargaining team received. I hadn't thought about the factor of turnover and how people would be missing those pieces to the story that had been built there. And can you also talk a little bit about trust as part of that process as well?
Yeah, so actually the first issue that PPS and PAT decided to address was trust, and trying to understand from each side why trust why people perceive trust to not be strong. And so, you know, in a nutshell, for PAT, trust is eroded, especially when our agreements that we have aren't followed. And so one of the things that we have really been asking for is that if both sides make an agreement and we understand what the agreement means, that then those things would be followed. And one of the ideas behind interest-based bargaining is that the decision makers are at the table. So someone shouldn't be able to say, we thought we were following the agreement because we didn't know what the intention was. The idea is that the people who are making decisions are fully aware of what the intention was. And so it gets really tricky when the people who are part of that process are no longer there and are no longer the decision makers. And that's, it almost makes it impossible to do interest-based bargaining because all of that knowledge is lost. So we're really hoping that, you know, PPS currently does not have a superintendent. The interim superintendent, Bob McCain, is, I think his last day is maybe next week. It's coming up really soon. Mm-hmm. And we don't have a superintendent selected to take his place at this point. But my hope is that we find a fantastic superintendent and the district is able to start building back all of the open positions that it still has, and mm-hmm. that we can really build some stability. And once we get there, my hope is that we could continue with a collaborative relationship between PAT and PPS. But it's hard to collaborate when there's nothing to stick to.
Mm-hmm. Mm. And also, you know, this wasn't on the predetermined list of things to talk about, but as part of this bargaining process, there was a moment where Suzanne Cohen came to the board to try to call the board back to the process. Do you want to just speak to that? And also what ended up happening that same week, the union filed an unfair labor practice with the state labor relations board. Is
that
correct?
That's right. Yeah. So Suzanne Cohen is the president of the Portland Association of Teachers. Mm-hmm. And a couple weeks ago at a board meeting, she did let the board know that we had an intention to file an unfair labor practice, which is a legal thing that you can do when a contract is not being followed. Mm-hmm. So some of the issues that we brought forward were that our contract says that the board may add 2 days to the school year, which it has for the last several years, if there are not cuts to staffing levels. Right. And the idea behind that is we believe that a better day is more important than a longer day. A better year is more important than a longer year. If a student is going to school for 2 extra days and those 2 extra days are just as miserable as the other 189 that they had, that's not a win for this student. We'd rather see schools fully staffed with all of the things that students need, the supports, small class sizes, art and music, the things that make school connect with kids, rather than having more days with fewer and fewer things to offer. And that's what the nature, that's the intent behind that agreement. Mm-hmm. But this year, the district did decide to cut positions because of budgetary realities. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, decided to go ahead and extend the school year for 2 days.
Right.
And that's in direct opposition to our agreement. And so that's, that was one of our unfair labor practices. What Suzanne Cohen said to the school board was that we're hoping they'd come back to the table and that we could reach agreement about this and not file the unfair labor practice. But the next day, the district's bargaining team did not show up to the bargaining session that we had scheduled.
And that was scheduled before the board meeting. I mean, it was on the table.
It had been scheduled far in advance, yeah.
Well, I just want to tell all our listeners that you are listening to KBOO Portland. This is Labor Radio. I'm Steven Siegel here with my co-host Chris Reiser, and we are talking with Portland Association of Teachers Vice President Elizabeth Teal.
Yeah, and so my next question is, you know, you spoke earlier about this year being a year that you didn't expect with the national election and with the outcome of Measure 97, the really confusing Measure 98 that did get passed and that we're seeing now is this kind of unfunded mandate. But in the larger political climate, how is PAT organizing in this larger context? For example, with the Secretary of Education, Betsy DeVos, getting ready to give a talk for the American Legislative Exchange Council, also known as ALEC, coming up in Denver later this month. So what is PAT doing to kind of push back on these larger trends that are occurring in the country right now?
Yeah. So Betsy DeVos... I have mixed feelings about her. Not that I have any doubt that I disagree with everything she stands for, but in a way, she stands for a lot of the same things that we've been dealing with for a long time. Under Arne Duncan, the previous Secretary of Education, there were a lot of the same policies being pushed, but it was hard for people to stand up against them because he was put in place by a very well-loved Democratic president. And Betsy DeVos does go further with a lot of her ideas than Arne Duncan did. But the reality is the philosophy is very similar. It's a pro-privatization philosophy, and we have been fighting against it and standing up against it for a long time. And in a way, it makes that message easier. Yeah. We have more allies, I feel like, now. But on the other hand, Betsy DeVos really is in power, and she really does have a very alarming ideas and a very alarming lack of understanding of how public education works and what it takes for it to be successful. But one of the things that privatizers, one of the strategies that privatizers use is to starve out schools by taking away funding and taking away their ability to serve students' needs so that public schools can be villainized. Mm. And so one of the things that, you know, bringing it locally, one of the things that we are fighting hard right now is to put funding into our schools. It's clear that the federal government is not going to be taking care to make sure that we can meet the needs of all of our students. We need to make sure in Oregon that we are putting the money into the systems that we believe need to be there for our citizens. And that's public education, and it's also healthcare, and it's also social services. But if we want those things for our community, for our society, we need to provide them. And so we're working hard on that as a local union, but also at the state level. And I think another huge thing that we have been doing, and we obviously need to do more and do better, is educating our members and our community about how these things work. I mentioned No Child Left Behind before, but it's a classic tactic to put a really nice label on a really awful policy. And there's a lag time before people often fully understand what that policy is going to do. So we need to be up in front of all of these things coming forward. Education savings accounts, what do those really mean?
That one sounds good too.
Doesn't it? That's right.
I have one of those.
Yeah. Well, you might not have one like that one. Are being proposed where people can take the money that should go from their taxes into public schools and instead use them for a private school of their choice instead of a religious school. So there's ways to set up these lovely sounding concepts in a way that makes it hard for the average citizen to oppose them. Because how could you oppose No Child Left Behind? How could you oppose education savings?
Right to work. How can you oppose the right to work? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, it's that double talk, the double speak, right? That Orwellian language that seems to have found its way well into the education system.
Yeah.
Well, what would you say is next for PAT? What do you see on the horizon, maybe in the next year?
Yeah, so I'll go the hard stuff and then the more exciting stuff. So we, like all unions, all public sector unions probably in the country, we are dealing with the specter of right to work legislation coming down. And what that would mean is union members in the public sector would be offered the opportunity to still get the benefits of union membership without needing to pay the dues. Mm. And that really will have a large impact on unions. Just like with public schools, if you take away the dues, you take away the services, and it makes it harder for unions to do what they have been doing for members and for schools, in the case of teachers' unions. And so our job is to do a better job than ever of reaching out to our members and educating and making sure people understand what our union is doing, what it stands for, what members' role is in that union, and what we can accomplish when we're united, when we're standing together. So that's one thing that's going to be hard work, but I think it's exactly the right work to be doing, is reaching out and connecting with our members. And then, I think in a larger picture, in public education, it's becoming, more and more clear. It's been becoming more and more clear that standing up for our students, we have to talk about more than just what's happening in our classrooms. We have to talk about what's going on in our classrooms, but we also have to acknowledge the way that the structures of us, of our society, impact our students and their families. Mm-hmm. And I know a lot of our members are very energized about engaging in that work. And so I think as a union, we are working on and will continue working on engaging in all of the intersecting issues that impact our students and our community that do relate to public education, although not always directly.
Could you give us an example?
Yeah, like the housing crisis. When our students don't have stable housing, they're not going to be able to perform in school. And maybe even performing in school is not the number one thing we need to worry about for that kid. We have to figure out solutions that take care of kids on the level of their basic needs. And schools are a part of that, but there are other parts of that. We can't only say that schools are responsible for ending poverty in America. We need to end poverty in America, and then our schools will be able to help our students achieve the goals that they have.
Mm, absolutely.
You mentioned housing. So what can a bunch of teachers do to have an impact on housing?
We have to be part of a larger movement, and we are, right? Every single person and organization can't focus on all of the important things to do, but we can recognize who our partners are, who share our values, support the work that they're doing, spread the word, educate, and get involved. So unions are such powerful organisms because we can communicate, we can spread the word, and we know how to stand together. And so one of the things that we have at PAT is a social justice committee that's been very engaged in connecting with things going on around town to stand up for our students and their families and the issues that are important to them. So we can show up, we can talk about it, we can find ways to educate our students about our society so that they can make up their own minds about what's important and what kind of society they want to live in.
Absolutely.
Great. We don't have a lot more time, but I'm wondering if You know, you've been doing this for just coming up on your first year now, right?
Yeah.
Any thoughts on continuing? How long is this position?
Well, I have been elected to a two-year
term. Okay.
So I don't have to make any commitments yet, Stephen.
Okay. All right.
She's halfway through that first. Uh-huh.
Any thoughts on, I don't know, coming into this, any sort of legacy that you would hope to leave as somebody that's a leader in PAT?
What the legacy that I would hope to leave is a union where members feel empowered, and that they know a union is made up of members. That's what it is. It's not a president and a vice president. It's every single person in that union. And to me, the legacy I would, the reason I came into this position is to empower the voice of teachers. And the legacy that I would like to leave is a union where teachers do feel empowered, where there are structures in place that people can access to accomplish the things that they want to accomplish together.
Sounds great. Chris, do you have anything you want to add?
I was curious, you know, you talked about legacy, but I'm curious about having now been through a year, right? And so you are halfway through this first term. Do you feel like, that's enough time? Like, how are you feeling, you know, as you kind of wrap up this first year, thinking back on what you've accomplished, lessons learned, things that you'd like to continue to push forward on?
Yeah, so it, you know, it's the end of the school year, and it kind of has that vibe of when you kind of reflect on what you thought was going to happen and then what did happen and what you want to do next year. So I have been thinking a lot about what I would like to accomplish next year. And, you know, barring major events that determine the route in a way you might not expect, my hope next year is to make sure every building in our school district has strong leaders in it that know how to and that are excited about empowering members in that building and working together to solve problems. I know we have a big district. We have over 90 sites and I think something like 120 programs. And so making those person-to-person connections over all of those places and programs is a big project, and it's one I'm really excited to embark on. Last year was really, Measure 97 was a huge piece of our time for a long time, and that was great and important work, and I'm excited to have, it'll be a different beginning of the year next year for sure.
Definitely. I have to agree with you on that. It's got to go up from here. Thinking about what's going on right now in the selection of the it looks like we're working on a new superintendent, and it seems like they've done some interesting things by bringing in onboarding the new board members even ahead of their start date so that they can have a voice in that process. Where does PAT fall in this? What kind of voice do educators have in what this process looks like, selecting the new superintendent?
Well, that is a very good question. In the initial process that occurred last winter, the Portland Association of Teachers did have two seats on a committee of, I think, about 20 people who had access to interviewing the finalists and giving feedback. So it was some part of that process. It wasn't as much of a part as we had hoped for.
Right.
But it did allow us to have some, to have a voice, and on that committee was our president, Suzanne Cohen, who was able to talk to the school board members about the candidates and felt good about the selection process I know she felt good about the selection that occurred.
Yeah.
This time, I'm not really clear on what the voice of teachers is going to be. It's been a pretty fast-tracked process. And my understanding, there's been some communications going out to the community about that. My understanding is they are looking directly at people at this point. So they, members of the committee are recommending people to the search firm.
Okay.
So it's it, rather than telling the search firm some criteria and having the search firm come up with the people.
I see.
And so my hope and expectation would be that once those names, once some of those names at least are released, that the teacher voice would absolutely need to be part of the discussion. There's, I don't see a way to have a successful superintendent without teachers feeling good about that choice.
Yeah.
So I would hope and I would assume that the school board would feel the same way.
Elizabeth, thank you so much for joining us today. Will you come back?
I'd love to. Yeah, okay. Thanks for having me.
We do have, I think we have one announcement, Chris. Do you have that ready to go?
I know that there is a meeting of the Oregon Bad A Teachers Association. I'm not sure if I can say that part of the word on the air, so I will avoid it. The Oregon BATs. They do have a meeting coming up, but I don't have the exact date coming with me right this moment.
Okay. Well, you have been listening to KBOO Portland Labor Radio. I'm Steven Siegel with Chris Reiser. Thank you so much for joining us.
To you, the 9-to-5er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Give me that song.
KBOO Community Radio will be broadcasting live from the 25th Annual Good in the Hood Multicultural Music and Food Festival. Saturday, June 24th, we'll be on site at Lillis Albina Park and we'll broadcast the festival from 1:30 to 9:30 p.m.
One more time.
Tune in to hear sets from Surround Sound, No Limits, In Touch, Tamara Stevens, and more. Again, that's a live broadcast from Good in the Hood, Saturday, June 24th, starting at 1:30 p.m. here on your